I want to welcome to the Board of Public Works. Happy holidays. Happy Hanukkah. Merry Christmas. Happy Kwanzaa. Happy New Year. Happy, happy people. So it is December 18th, 2013. And I want to ask if the treasurer or the comptroller would have any opening thoughts, comments.
Thank you, Governor. Good morning, Madam Treasurer. It's hard to believe, as you mentioned, that we're just a week away from Christmas. But as we head into the final stretch of the holiday season, I wanted to say once again to my fellow Marylanders, please shop Maryland for the holidays. As I mentioned a couple of meetings ago, I've been visiting main streets across the state to promote our local retailers, the hardworking folks who employ our friends and our neighbors, sustain our neighborhoods, and reinvest in our communities. I continue to remind people that these small businesses are the folks who sponsor our little leagues, booster our high schools, and adopt our highways. In meeting some of these small business owners in La Plata, Cumberland, Laurel, Mount Washington, Annapolis, Easton, and Cambridge in the last 2 weeks, and in hearing the stories of how they've reinvented themselves in tough economic times, made sacrifices, undergone unthinkable risks to hold true to their community and their family's legacy, because so many of these businesses are second, third generation. I've once again found myself richer in spirit for the experience, even if I'm a bit lighter in my wallet, because I try to put my money where my mouth is. But at each stop, I seem to find a hidden treasure, a perfect gift for a friend or a loved one. But the gift that you buy locally isn't just about the one person the gift's for. It's about all of us in the Maryland economy. Because these small businesses that you make these purchases at support and are the backbone of the Maryland economy. Getting off the internet and shopping Maryland for the holidays ensures that our hard-earned money stays in our communities, supports the people and places we care so much about. So I hope to be joined by my fellow Marylanders as we make our last-minute holiday purchases, and my best Christmas and holiday and Hanukkah wishes to everyone. I did find in Easton an independent bookstore. There aren't very many of them left, but God bless this one. And I saw a copy of a wonderful new book, Bully Pulpit, by Doris Kearns Goodwin, about President Theodore Roosevelt and President William Howard Taft and the Golden Age of Journalism. And I bought it as a Christmas gift for the governor.
Thank you very, very much. Mr. Comptroller, that's very kind of you. Thank you. I love Doris Kearns Goodwin.
Yeah. Well, we kid ourselves at Democratic events. We say the last great Republican president was Abraham Lincoln. But this gentleman, President Roosevelt, albeit a Republican, I mean, he is a fascinating and very appealing political figure. And I thought you'd be interested in
him. You know, when you read some of his talks, his generation struggled in language almost very reminiscent or echoing of the language you hear a lot of our leaders talking about, where they talk about how their fathers were in the Second World War and their parents' generation did all of that. And in one talk that Roosevelt gave, he was saying, yeah, but we have our challenges too, and we have things we have to do in our generation. But it struck me as how very similar it is to the way our leaders sometimes appear to be groping for the ability to measure up to what their parents' generation had done. It's very fascinating. Thank you. It's very nice, and a nice little warm message in here.
That'll stay private.
I've got to go find something for you.
No, don't worry. But I also, at the same store, found Pillars of Fire by Taylor Branch. And anyone who has read anything by this fabulous Maryland author, Taylor Branch, understands how well he understood the 60s. And the treasurer and I lived through the, somehow survived the 60s. And I wanted to give
this a great
time. Happy holidays.
Yes. Oh, dear. Thank you.
Did you get a warm
very,
message?
Very, very kind. I got a warm message. Thank you. Thank you. This is lovely.
That's very kind of you.
That's very, very good of you. The King Year, America in the King Years, 1963 to 65, I remember them well. They were
very
difficult.
Tumultuous.
Yes. I have only a very brief report. I listened to the comptroller for the last several weeks, and I have done as you said, and the Maryland merchants ought to be very pleased with the Kopp family. This appreciate it, and I join the comptroller and the governor in wishing everybody very happy holidays, happy family time. It's a time when you can really stop. We just stop and just sort of walk around our neighborhood and the areas and say hello to people that you just normally just sort of wave and they go by and you don't say anything. One more wonderful reason for loving being in Maryland. But I thank you. An independent bookstore, I mean, God knows. We certainly don't have enough of them. And ones that sell actually real books. I mean, with pages that you actually can feel and turn. It's, I hope, not dying pleasure, but a great pleasure. Glad to be here.
Ready to rope? Ready to go? Here we doing, Kevin? Okay. Let me know when you do. All right, we're going to start with the secretary's agenda.
You can, but I believe actually Secretary Collins has one project we could do, and then maybe the other thing
okay.
will be ready. So, Secretary Collins.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Ms. Comptroller. On the DGS agenda, action item 12, CGL, we have an item that I'd like to move for first, if you would, on behalf of Delegate Melvin Stutes, Governor, to your right. It has to do with a building that you're very familiar with, the Arch Social Club. There is a grant of totaling $118,000 to that facility for that particular monument. Governor, looking at my agenda, I think I have almost no controversy at this time. The one item that was contentious, we moved to a further meeting. So if I could move my entire agenda, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. We're calling the
entire... We're calling the entire DTS agenda.
Thank you, Governor.
Could you formally withdraw item one, please, make this?
Yes, decision. I am going to do that. Governor, DGS has 23 items on our agenda, including one supplemental. We are withdrawing item 1C, which was the one controversial issue this time, and we're glad to answer any questions on any of the remaining projects. Governor, I will add, along with Delegate Stutes, we have a number of citizens from across Maryland for grants and loans this time, and they are just very pleased to be here. Some of them came from long distances, so I would like to move them back to home as soon as we could.
Okay. Council Delegate, you want to be heard here? And what item is the Arch Social Club?
12 CGL, sir.
12 CGL.
Remember, y'all come on. Only opportunity. Hello, everyone.
Good morning.
And happy holiday season to everyone. I stand before you, Mr. Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Mr. Secretary, and all of the secretaries and all of God's people to thank you for the opportunity to be able to go for us. I've got two funerals that I need to get back to in Baltimore. Two sisters passed within 3 days of each other. So I'm thankful to you, Secretary Collins, to allow us to do this. Standing before me is the president of the Arts Social Club, Mr. Van Anderson. We received and got a bond passed a couple of years ago to renovate a building at Pennsylvania North Avenue known as the Arch Social Club. This state helped to participate, and last year we celebrated. We thought we were the oldest in the country, but we found out once we went on to advertise our 100th anniversary that we were the second oldest. So we'll take that. Delaware, the oldest black men's social club in the state of Maryland and the second oldest one in the entire country of America. And it needed some work, and I'm thankful to the board for what it is that you have on your agenda, and hopefully we'll get a yay all the way down the line on that so that we can continue what has already been started. It has really invigorated the entire community there at Pennsylvania North and those that know about the history of Pennsylvania Avenue. And I'm one that, on my epitaph, I want to say, helped to restore the history of Pennsylvania Avenue that was a gift to the entire world as far as entertainment. And this can go a tremendously long way in doing that. So that's basically the statement I have to make for you. And hopefully we will receive a favorable opinion from you both, from you all three. Okay?
Mr. President, you want to be heard?
I would just like to say thank you to the state of Maryland and thank you to Delegate Stukes and Senator Rodwell for providing us with the support that we needed in order to try to get the renovation work done on the building. We're happy and proud to be a part of the state of Maryland for 100 years incorporated since 1912. And we even still have some pictures of the event. I think we had an event where you played upstairs down at the club.
Yeah, that's right.
One time. So, you know, we have forgot about you.
That was
you.
A good day. That was what, about 13 years ago or something?
Yes, sir. So as soon as we can get this renovation complete, we would like to invite you and some other groups back, you know,
awesome.
So we can help to revitalize live entertainment on the avenue. So we just thank you all, and we hope and wish for your continued support.
It's a great old building. You can really sense the history inside the place. So
yes, sir.
I'm honored to be able to say I once played the Arch Social
Yes, sir.
Anything? Okay. Mr. Controller.
No, that's fine. Thank you. It's great
You're
to
good.
See a delegate here.
We're going
to
vote on it in 1 second.
All right. Just in closing, it happens that they were incorporated on a day very near and dear to me, the Ides of March in 1912, and it just so happened in 1948 there was another delivery made in the state of Maryland at University Hospital. They named him Melvin L. Stukes. So you know it's near and dear to me.
Thank you very much.
Governor, thank you. Mr. Secretary, item 21 is the grant to the Board of Directors of the Patterson Park Public Charter School. That's a fabulous program that's going on up there. And thank you very much for, putting it on the agenda and letting us be able to vote positively.
There is the representative here, Mr. Comptroller.
Is there someone
from
here?
Patterson Park?
Here.
There he is.
Oh, great.
Do you want to speak or you want to pretend that it's going to pass?
Yeah.
No, come on up. Come on up. Come on up.
Thanks.
You can't do that.
Well, thank you very, very much.
Can you say your name for the record?
Ed Rutkowski.
Thanks.
And actually, the governor came and celebrated, helped us celebrate our fifth anniversary, so thank you. Yeah. Thank you to the 46th District delegation and to you, assuming the vote is positive. And with that, anybody wants to see one of Baltimore's great schools, come to the Patterson Park Public Charter School in Baltimore. Thank
You've
you.
Done some great work up there, Ed. It's come a long way since you were first swinging your hammer one house at a time 15 years ago.
Now it's schools. Schools are the things that matter.
Yeah, it's great. Mr. Comptroller?
No, I'm delighted.
All right. Comptroller moves approval of the entire agenda items of DGS, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. And we move on now to the three slides I wanted to share with you. We're going to go to the Secretary's agenda, but I wanted to just update you. Are you good to go, Kevin? You sure? I can. Okay. I want to just update you on the Affordable Care Act and its implementation here in Maryland. We got off to a rocky start with the healthcare shopping website. Every state in the union had to make an election as to whether or not they wanted to be leaders and implement their own, or whether they wanted to fall back and rely on the sort of federal catch-all site. We decided to be one of those states as an early implementer that was a leader. With any leadership, there are risks. Leaders make themselves vulnerable. In our case, we got off to a rocky start, but we have been making some important strides, still improving this. It's like changing the tires on a rolling car along with some engine parts. But we are moving forward, and we are making strides. And I just wanted to give you a brief sort of snapshot update on this. This pie chart represents the one color blue, the largest chunk, is the 87% of us who already have health insurance and really aren't terribly affected by this. The 5% that is the lighter blue are insured people who we think probably won't even sign up for this, even though they can now. They'll probably take the penalty and not sign up. The yellow represents people that are not eligible. They are residents, though not yet naturalized. And then, so the chunk of the people in our state, those persons that have been most inconvenienced and frustrated by their desire to sign up for insurance when it's on the first date that it is available, which is January 1st under the Affordable Care Act, are the wedges there that are in the dark green, the light green, and the black. The darkest green are the additional people, the 150,000 that you hear about in some of the newspaper articles, of people that we hope will, by the end of the March enrollment, sign up for the qualified health plan, that is a private provider plan. The light green are those we hope will sign up for additional. The light green and the black represent those that we will sign up for Medicaid. So about 3% of the people, when we talk about this chunk of 5%, 3% are the people we look to sign up for private provider plans, and then the 2% are the people that we look to sign up for Medicaid. The overall system, Kev? Hold on 1 second. There we go. So, folks, this is the system. this is how it was designed. The person to the if you look at the left, that little person icon in a tie, is how an individual, thank you, would apply. And it was envisioned that most people would apply to the website. Failing the website, or if they get stuck, then they'd call that call center. Failing either of those, they can put in a paper application. The piece of this that actually worked very, and then all of that eventually has to go to the Maryland Health Exchange. The piece of this that's actually worked very well from the outset was the interaction between the health exchange and that federal hub above it that's represented in this slide by a, looks like a computer with various stacks to it. That represents 8 different databases in the federal government, IRS, INS, other databases that are supposed to instantaneously calculate whether you are entitled under the law to a tax credit when you sign up for health insurance. That instantaneous interaction, as well as the confirmation that you qualify for this, then goes back to the health exchange, and then a completed electronic packet of information on every individual applying, once they choose a health care plan, is supposed to go to the private provider or to Medicaid. So that's how the system worked overall. That's how it was designed anyway. But when it started off, there were glitches at every point. The call center became overwhelmed. The manual processes became many to overcome the technical challenges. Isabel, project's been run very much akin to an emergency management operation, as you might imagine, since the first day when we got off to the rocky start and saw the problems were much deeper than any of our contractors entirely understood before we started rolling. There were 9 major, so there were 4 pieces of this that we needed to stabilized, make functional. One was the website itself for users. The second one was that interface with private providers. The third was the interface with Medicaid. And the fourth was the business and the manual processes, all those workarounds. We were able to make 9 major fixes. There's still many minor fixes throughout this process, but the 9 major fixes have allowed the site to become functional for most users, and now we're starting to begin our marketing efforts to get people to go on and sign up if they are so inclined and so situated. The first people have already started to receive their cards, and CareFirst and the other people have been receiving payments under this, so that 834 interface, as they call it, with the private providers is is working, still in need of improvement, but working. The Medicaid one we hope to have working shortly. The call center and the manual processes, we still have work to do, and the website as well. But overall, it's functioning a little better. The best proof of that is not my word to you, but this next slide, which represents, and the one we're looking for is the red and blue graph, Kevin. These are the enrollments through the, coming up in a second here, the enrollments through the website. Got it. Well, I'll say this while we're finding that last graph, that yesterday was a record level of enrollments once again for this website. That is on top of the record number of enrollments for the prior few days. So every weekday since Friday, actually, has been a record high level of enrollments. So this graph shows you the back to the week ending of November 2nd, and every week after that shows you the uptick in enrollment. So we're now up to about 29,758 enrollments so far, and the light blue represents the qualified health plan, the private providers. That looks to be in the neighborhood of about 7,000 or more. The rest of that are new Medicaid. The total goal in all of this is to sign up and cover 260,000 people that did not have health care coverage before, and to do that by the end of March. So that's where we are with those people that we had been aggressively marketing to all year in what we call the primary adult care category, those 80,000 will also be signed up into Medicaid and covered. So we are pretty confident we will hit the 110,000 new Medicaid enrollees, and we're now starting to do our push so that the second half of this game, we put some more points on the board in terms of people covered than we did the first half of this game in terms of the private provider plans. So that's who we are and what we do. The reason Isabel Fitzgerald isn't here is because she's been managing this operation, which had mostly IT problems rather than health policy problems, but it was getting in the way of the accomplishment of this major health policy. So we're sorting this out. It is getting better by degrees, and I thank you for giving me the opportunity to update you. Okay, Secretary's agenda.
Thank you, Governor. Good morning. Good morning, Treasurer. Mr. Comptroller, 6 items on the Secretary's agenda this morning, 3 reports of emergency procurements. We're prepared for your questions.
You got something? No? Okay. Treasurer moves approval. Seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We move on to the Department of Natural Resources Real Property Agenda.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. Emily Wilson with the Maryland Department of Natural Resources. We have 7 items on our agenda today. Of note, just between the two boards in December, Maryland Environmental Trust has brought over 1,500 acres of conservation easements to the board. And today we do have Jim O'Connell, who is the chairman of the Board of Trustees for the Maryland Environmental Trust, and Liz Buxton, who's the executive director, is also here. If you don't mind, I believe Jim would like to say just a few brief comments.
Good. Come on up, Mr. O'Connell. Ms. Buxton.
Good morning, Governor, Mr. Comptroller, and Madam Treasurer. My name is Jim O'Connell. I'm the chairman of the Maryland Environmental Trust. I think we are the smallest part of the state government. We have a total of 10 state employees, but we operate with about 25 volunteers who put in a significant number of hours, plus an additional 35 volunteers who help us monitor our easements. I want to thank the board for their support. I also want to specifically thank the governor for helping us recruit easement donations this year by sending a personal letter to all prior easement donors. It was effective. I mean, we saw a real uptick in the interest in the trust. I want to thank the comptroller for meeting with me about tax issues, and we had some initial discussions about transferable tax credits, which I think is something that we need to spend some more time in the future. I also want to thank the governor for sponsoring a reception for easement donors, which was very popular and provided tremendous outreach for our program.
Let's make sure we do it again.
Okay.
Yeah, don't let me forget.
Okay. Now, let me just give you the results so far for this year. We're still not done, but we have 23 easements, which have permanently protected about 2,400 acres. We've had three bargain sales where we've had some donations of money, which we use to help put easements together. We, of the 2,400 acres, we have preserved something over 1,000 are in the targeted ecological area. There's 1,100 acres of farmland, 980 acres of woodland, and 192 acres of wetlands.
What percentage is that then in the targeted
area? Slightly less than half. Since 2007, we have preserved 19,000 acres with voluntary donations from the citizens of Maryland. We are truly a public-private organization, and 20% of our budget for last year was based on private donations. So the state provides us, our employees, and provides some the support of the Attorney General's office, but we depend to a significant degree on public contributions. And part of the outreach, which we were helped with by the governor's letter, was that we were able to make contact with our donors, and we are raising money because it's necessary. Now, that's this year, and just tell you what we're going to be doing next year. We have started a new program called Urban Easements, and we're working with Baltimore Neighbor Space. And we are trying to help them get access to potential parks and things like that by taking conservation easements on small pieces of land that are needed for access. And we've actually done this in a couple of places on the Eastern Shore. So that's a whole new direction we're moving there. With the Civil War Trust, we are the Civil War Trust is going to be purchasing some land around the Antietam battlefield, up to $2 million worth, and MET will hold the easements on those properties around the battlefield. We have more and more easements to monitor, and this is where our volunteers really help us. We need to focus on some of the new, different areas of the state where we have not as been successful. Honestly, we need to do more work in Western Maryland and Southern Maryland to get more easements there. And when I say that, that brings up this idea of transferable tax credits, because we do have a Maryland tax credit, but you have to be a Maryland resident to get the benefits of that. And we find that a significant number of pieces of land that we would like to preserve are owned by people who are not residents of the state and have no use for those tax credits. And like Virginia has done, we would like to see some way that those could be transferable and help us preserve more land. We intend to be engaging in more outreach and fundraising. We're looking for more urban easements, and we're looking forward to another good year. I would mention that the federal enhanced tax credit ends on December 31. I have an article from the BNA Tax and Accounting, which came out last week, which says that we still enjoy majority support of both parties on both sides of the aisle, and yet we can't get this bill through Congress. So it's puzzling. There is some recent break in the dam. The farm bill, which is just, I think, just got the support in the House, provides some conservation projects that will be useful to the state of Maryland and to MET. Just in conclusion, I would like to thank all of you for your support and work, and we intend to do a better job next year. Thank you.
Thank you.
That sounds like a very exciting agenda for next year. That's really, I think the urban easement idea is.
That's kind of a new idea in this whole land trust thing. Just a quick example, one we were able to do down the Eastern Shore, there was a creek where people like to, you know, use kayaks and canoes, and by taking an easement on less than an acre of land, we were able to provide public access to the citizens of the town. So we're taking a different look at how these easements can be useful.
Good. Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Governor.
Anything else?
Okay. If you don't mind, I would just like to recognize MET has really done a sprint towards the end of this calendar year, and one of the key players in that has been John Hudson. John's standing over here. He's retiring imminently, and this is his last board.
Where are you, John? Stand up. There we go. Thank you. John, you want to say anything? All right. John, thanks for your service. It's a lot of, that's a gift that goes forward to future generations. All right, Comptroller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We move on now to the Department of Budget Management.
Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, good morning. There are 18 items on the Department of Budget and Management's agenda for today. I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Mr. Comptroller, item one, please.
Yes. Item one is a contract to provide the Public Service Commission's technical staff with support to alter the Maryland Renewable Energy Standard Program, basically to include offshore wind energy projects. So we have from the Public Service Commission, Robert Kane, who is the Associate General Counsel, and also Chrissy Godfrey.
Okay. No, here's my problem with this. Obviously, offshore wind is a big priority, but we're being asked to award a three-year contract with a value of roughly $970,000 to the Washington-based law firm of Kay Scholer. Their job, as I understand it, is to help you at the PSC incorporate offshore wind energy into the state's existing renewable energy program. Here's the concern, though. We're being asked to award this contract for almost $1 million to Kay Scholer, and in so doing, bypass two other vendors who came with considerably lower bids. For example, the Boston Pacific Company submitted a proposal for roughly $720,000, a 26% price differential, while Nixon Peabody, prominent firm, came in far lower at about $327,000. I've been around long enough to dismiss outlier bids like Nixon Peabody, or at least take it with a grain of salt. But my question is, what justifies giving the contract to Kay Scholer purely on technical grounds when Boston Pacific appears to be highly regarded within the industry for its subject matter expertise? A cursory glance at their website, for instance, shows that they were hired by the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities to review applications for developing offshore wind facilities off the Jersey coastline. In fact, they have worked with the Maryland PSC in recent years, notably as a consultant in the process that led to the award of a contract to build and operate a natural gas-fired combined cycle facility in Charles County. So the question is, what are the technical factors that justify spending an additional $250,000 of taxpayer money to secure, or ratepayer money, to secure Kay Scholer's services? Please.
Sure. Mr. Comptroller, the reason why Kay Scholer was chosen was because of experience. Boston Pacific, as you noted, is very experienced in the energy field. However, Kay Scholer is the most experienced in offshore wind. They've participated in the most offshore wind projects than Boston Pacific. Also, The team that they're going to have working on this project are more senior than Boston Pacific. And additionally, Boston Pacific, when they put in their proposal, failed to address one of the key issues that the proposals where we are waiting on, which is the cost effectiveness factor, which is a big part in offshore wind and in the legislation that was passed. Therefore, the Public Service Commission was left with deciding who should work on the project. Should a more experienced team or a team that was cheaper? And the agency decided that the most experienced team should be the team to work on offshore wind to make sure that the project is successful and Maryland benefits from offshore wind.
Well, that's interesting because I looked at the website, as I mentioned, for Boston Pacific, and they talked about their New Jersey experience with offshore wind facilities similar to this. You go to the Kay Scholer corporate website, and there isn't a single mention of anything to do with this subject matter. Nothing. So help me understand how they are substantively so far ahead of Boston Pacific.
Well, here with me today is Ms. Chrissy Godfrey. She's actually the director of our Energy Analysis and Planning division, and she was on the selection committee, and she probably could answer that question.
Great.
Better than I can.
I don't know either of the firms that well, but $250,000 is a lot of money to some people, and I guess the question is, how do you justify that?
Sure. Let me note, I guess, for one, I'm aware of the fact that Boston Pacific has worked with the New Jersey process for offshore wind. They haven't finished that process yet, nor do they have a successful offshore wind farm as of yet. The Maryland process was modeled very closely to New Jersey's, but we felt that we wanted the breadth of experience from Kay Schuler that, I shouldn't say Kay Schuler specifically, but their sub, which the it's escaping my mind at the moment, but I think it's Kai or something like Sullivan Cove, and then there's another subcontractor. Anyway, specifically, they have the renewable energy and offshore wind experience explicitly, not only in Europe, but the Great Lakes, the Northeast, and Texas. So in the evaluation team's mind, we felt like that breadth of experience was certainly something that we needed, since internally the PSC staff only has onshore wind experience. And given the short time frame that we have in order to get the regulations done, we felt that that experience was worth the extra money.
Great. Well, that kind of makes sense, but I'd hope that in the briefing materials we get this information. I take it your testimony is that we're hiring Kay Scholer because they have a subcontract partner that has experience in offshore wind, so I guess we're paying for Kay Scholer and the subcontractor, and that explains why we're paying more money. But anyway, I'm going to vote for this, Governor. I know you're a big champion of this proposal, and hopefully I'm skeptical about the economics of offshore wind, but I'm happy to move forward and see what these folks come up with. But I would have been perfectly happy with Boston Pacific, in the Christmas spirit, I'll let it pass.
Okay. Anything else?
Yes, I had another item.
About that one, I assume, I don't know what the constraints are of going into the background of the awards in this meeting, but the background information that you have given us, in fact, does make it look as though Kay Schuler has significantly more experience broken down into the 7 areas in which you looked. I don't know if this is public, but it made me feel significantly better about it. It was not just a sort of a, well, they got more experience, but actually broken down into the into the specific things.
That is correct.
But what it turns out, apparently, is that they don't necessarily, but they have a subcontractor.
Let me clarify. I'm not trying to say that only the sub has the experience on offshore wind, but they do have significant experience on offshore wind. So the team together, for us, more than kind of blew away Boston Pacific's proposal in terms of experience.
Yeah. Well, anyhow, thank you.
Well, and let me just conclude by saying we really need, obviously, wind energy for our renewable portfolio. That's a given, but we have to make sure we get it done right and that we're getting good value for what we're asking everybody to sacrifice and put in. And that's why we appreciate all the rigor you can apply to these contracts. I assume there'll be more in the future. Thank you.
Can I ask one question while we're on this? What is the impact of the announcement that the Secretary of Interior made?
The Secretary of Interior made an announcement yesterday that they are now putting out for lease by developers some 80,000 acres of ocean. Just in an area just off of the Delaware Maryland line, it's been deconflicted in terms of shipping traffic and other concerns, and so we hope to be able to hear back now. And it's an important milestone in the process. That's what she was here to announce yesterday, right? Okay. Well, you work at the PSC, all right?
Okay.
That's what she was here to announce. I was here. I heard her announce it.
Okay.
All right. Thanks very much. Treasurer moves approval, seconded by the comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying.
Of that item.
I'm sorry.
I have a few.
Okay. We have other items. Hold up then.
Item 9S.
9S.
Okay. Item 9S, and I think the superintendent is here, Dr. Lowry. Item 9 is a contract to provide project management and grant support services on behalf of the Partnership for the Assessment of Readiness for College and Career Consortium. That's going to be provided to execute the Race to the Top Assessment Program. So, Dr. Lowry.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller.
Thank you, Madam Superintendent. Thank you for being here. This item, we're being asked to award a $95 million sole source contract to an entity called the Partnership for the Assessment of Readiness for College and Career, acronym, is it PARC? Is that how you pronounce it? To implement here in Maryland the National Testing Program, better known as the Common Core Standards. I'm not going to make this meeting a platform for discussing the merits or the shortcomings of the National Common Core Initiative. Isn't the right venue, although I've heard a lot about it from teachers and parents and other folks who are not here in the room. But I would like to gain a better understanding of how this particular consortium works and what exactly it's actually going to be doing here in Maryland, given the fact that I read it's federal dollars, but is it being funded entirely by federal dollars, and can you confirm that no state dollars are being used to pay for PARC services?
Yes, to both. Mr. Comptroller, this is the U.S. Department of Education Race to the Top grant under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. The grant is solely awarded to this consortium to develop assessments that will align with the Maryland College and Career Ready standards that we are implementing fully this year. And that assessment will ensure a more profound look at students' analytical performance, higher order thinking skills. It performs in ways that we've never had assessments to perform before. We are one of the states in the 18 consortium that has been in the consortium since its inception. We are the only state in the consortium that will be field testing the new assessment in every single school in our state. So we have embraced this work because we want to make sure we have an assessment that will give us good feedback. And I believe the reason we were asked to take on this fiscal agency is because we have been involved since day one, and we are committed to this work.
Well, we're all in favor, obviously, of assessment and accountability, having everybody taught basics that will prepare them for their colleges and careers. The question is, obviously, the implementation. Sure. And that's what I'm getting at here with this grant, because in the grant it says that, quote, this $95 million is they're going to successfully execute all purposes of USDE's Race to the Top assessment program grant that includes the development of national student assessments to provide valid, reliable, and fair assessment of students' readiness for colleges and careers. I mean, as you more eloquently stated, that is a huge undertaking. And my concern, I guess, is that it appears that they're going to have a lot of power over the education that our kids will receive in Maryland public schools and the tests that will wield considerable influence over their futures, as well as those of our teachers and schools in which they work. So exactly who is getting the $95 million? Who are the people? Is it I understand it's a corporate entity that's getting a truckload of federal dollars to do this in Maryland and other states, but is there anybody from Park here this morning to shed some light on the company and the business model that is going to receive this extraordinary amount of money?
I would like to introduce the Chief Executive Officer, if I may, before I bring Ms. Slover up, respond to the first part of your assessment about the work. The So Goes Park, Inc., So Goes the Consortium, So Goes Park, Inc. If the 18 states aren't happy, Park, Inc. no longer exists. Park, Inc. evolved from the 18-state consortium, and so we act the states as advisory board. We put out exactly what we need and what we must have in order to be successful, and they respond to our needs. So to your question, who is actually driving this work? This work is being driven by leaders at the state level, and our teachers are involved in every aspect of development. So with that, if I will introduce Laura Slover, who is not only the chief executive officer for Park, Inc., but she is also a sitting state board member in the District of Columbia, and so her district as well is a part of this work.
Good morning. I'm Laura Slover. I'm the CEO of Park, Inc. Would you like me to pick up where Dr. Lowry left off?
So why did you hear?
Great. Thank you for having me. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Let me give you a little bit of background about the Park Consortium, which, as Dr. Lowry said, is made up of 19 member states that together over the last 3.5 years with dollars from the Race to the Top assessment grant have been building a set of tests in grades 3 through 8 and in high school that will help track student progress all the way through their education and indicating their readiness to go directly into credit-bearing courses in colleges and to go into good jobs.
Let me interrupt just for a minute, if I could.
Yes.
Because before I forget this, you said there are 19 states in the consortium?
There are 18 in the District of Columbia.
18 in the District of Columbia. And
correct.
Are all of them contracting with Park for this turnkey test process?
Let me tell you a little bit about how it works, because the answer is no. The dollars flow from the federal grant, the Race to the Top grant, directly through Maryland and to Park, Inc. to then pay the contractors. There are 7 contractors that have been involved in this project for 3.5 years. The first fiscal agent of this project was Florida. Florida, through competitive bids, solicited the services of a number of contractors to build test items, to pilot those test items, to build technology supports, all of the things that go into a 21st century assessment. Those contracts have been underway for a number of years, and they will transfer from Florida to Park, Inc. So those same contracts will be held by Park Inc. And then through the contractual arrangement that Park Inc. has with Maryland, Park Inc. will continue to build on those relationships and to pay those vendors. So the individual states will not pay the vendors directly, nor will they pay Park Inc. directly. Those federal dollars will flow through Maryland, which is the new fiscal agent that has agreed to take on this work on behalf of the consortium and contract with us to do all the programmatic work that is involved in the consortium, from governance and management of the states to development of the assessment to building the research agenda and to helping states think about what are the policies that are going to govern this assessment in the future. The consortium itself, Park Inc., will not make high-level decisions about what students learn, what happens in the classroom. Those decisions are not consortium decisions. Those are state decisions and, of course, belong to educators and districts in those states. Park Inc. was established for the sole purpose of supporting the 19 states as they finish out this Race to the Top assessment grant. They share the common vision for the assessment system that I talked about. They've developed that from the beginning through their original proposal in 2010 and then through the subsequent work over the last 3 years. Countless educators across all of the states have reviewed every test item. They've been in every conversation of the sausage making of the test, which I won't go into the details of, but countless hours from test specifications to the design to the items, et cetera, all with the goal of measuring student performance in common across the state so they can have a common benchmark and be able to gauge progress compared to one another so they can lock arms and do this together. While the organization Park Inc. is new, it's essentially a spinoff from the organization called Achieve, where I and my team have worked over the last 3 years, which was competitively procured, and that has served as the project manager since 2010.
Who was that competitively procured by?
It was competitively procured through the state of Kentucky. That contract was then transferred, which was another partner state, is another partner state. See, the states share this responsibility of procurement.
You understand why I...
It's
just
complicated.
The word labyrinth comes to mind.
Tell me about it. I've lived this for 3.5 years. It is quite complicated. So that contract will now go directly between Maryland and Park Inc. And the responsibilities of Achieve will be folded in to the responsibilities of the new organization. Essentially, we're a spinoff from an existing organization. We're bringing all of my team over from Achieve, so we're just going to hit the ground running with the expertise and the professional knowledge built in the last 3 years. We have been managing this process for the last 3 years. We've managed all the vendors. We've built relationships with the states and run all the operations of the consortium to date. So it's important, and it's an important aspect of that contract that the full team is coming over, and I have three of my teammates with me here today. So it's technically an administrative shift in how we're running the work of the consortium rather than an entirely new endeavor. I hope I answered your questions.
Yeah, no, it's you have a difficult task trying to unravel all this stuff. And as I said, conceptually, I'm in favor of what you're doing. It's the implementation that I'm hearing considerable controversy about at the classroom level. And hang on, I see the superintendent getting up there. And trust me, it's at least private conversations. I don't know what she experiences in public, but there is a lot of concern about the rushed implementation and of this particular initiative in the state of Maryland. And this is from people that support the overall concept, but are really concerned about the negative impact of going too fast too soon. So I have some other questions because you mentioned Florida, which apparently is now we're replacing. I'm sorry, go ahead.
If I just may, for just an intersection here.
On the controversy.
Yes, because I just want to kind of disaggregate Park's work from the implementation of the standards. So I think the information that you're hearing when you're out traveling the state around the implementation of the curriculum is the implementation of the Maryland College and Career Ready standards. This is the assessment wing that's going to be standing at the end to actually give us feedback on how well students are learning. So I'll stop there. We can have another conversation about that implementation process, but I want to save Laura from owning that piece.
No, I understand that. Thank you for making that. And their concern is that the state as an obsession with testing rather than teaching. And look, we're all for accountability, everyone. But to the point it becomes kind of an exotic fetish where we're just like all consumed with this test and the curriculum for the test and everyone's evaluated on the test, aren't we losing? Well, we can talk about that some other time, I guess, but thank you. I don't mean to cut it off, but it is a big topic among teachers and parents out there that it's the implementation rather than the concept. But you mentioned Florida. We're taking Florida's place, I take it. Florida was the grants administrator and general manager of the initiative. Why did Florida stop?
I believe the only reason we can give you is that the state decided that they no longer wanted to be fiscal agents. They were discussed this with the United States Department of Education and with the consortium members, just that. I mean, they didn't go into a lot of detail. I don't know. So I can't give you the detail. I can tell you that we sat down with the United States Department of Education, Park, Inc., Florida, and Maryland. Our assistant attorneys general have been phenomenal through this work, and Steve Brooks, my chief operating officer. So we have vetted the numbers and the integrity of what we are now transferring so that we know we're in a good place there. The reasons that Florida made the decision that they made have not been articulated other than they didn't want to do it anymore.
And that's a pretty short and sweet answer, I guess, to
I don't want to put words in anyone's mouth.
Well, it does raise some concerns if there's something other than ideology going on here. But let me just kind of, since I have both of you here, and I may not again on this, and it's a big amount of money. The question, if you're asked out in the public, who actually is minding the store with this complicated system of PARC that we now have ownership of, I guess, because we are now the grants administrator. Who is responsible for the oversight of the initiative? I understand we have a multi-state consortium with 18 states, but who's overseeing the corporate wing of the consortium? Who's actually responsible for doing the work? And who's acting as an honest, independent broker to hold the consortium, as I'm sure you would like to be, held accountable for job performance? And it's right now, based on my reading of the background materials, it appears that you are going to be in charge of, and I'm sure you're very talented, and basically in charge of everything, including essentially the evaluation. So tell me why it's not the fox guarding the chicken house here as far as a – and I'm not making any implications. Obviously, you know, you are very obviously have outstanding backgrounds. But who is minding the store?
I'm going to invite, if it's okay with you, my CFO, Kurt Smith, to join me up here.
Oh, good.
There's a number of controls that have been put in place. And there are multiple layers of this project, which you have noticed. It is a complex endeavor with 18 states and the District of Columbia working together to build this assessment. Having established a new entity to continue the management and oversight of the work, PARC, Inc. will be governed by two entities. One, its own board. We have a small but growing board of directors that includes Paul Pastrak, formerly the state superintendent in Louisiana, and Gene Wilhoit, formerly the state superintendent in Kentucky, superintendent of education, excuse me. And Gene Wilhoit also served for 7 years as the director of the Council of the Chief State School Officers. So they come to this with a great deal of education background and some fiscal responsibility and background as well, running agencies. Ultimately, so the PARC, Inc. board has oversight of the PARC, Inc. finances. We have built internal controls. We have a CFO on board. He's here and can and join me at the podium. Thank you. And he can talk specifically about the internal controls that we've built in the organization, should that be helpful. There are a number of vendors who will be under contract to Park Inc. for the contracts that will get transferred from Florida to Park Inc. And we will be responsible in collaboration with the state partners for overseeing the quality of that work, signing off on deliverables, and saying to Maryland, these are okay to pay. So Maryland then can transfer those dollars to us, and we can pay the vendors. And let me give you some of the names of the vendors who are the contractors for this project. Pacific Metrics, Pearson, the National Math and Science Institute, ETS, the Educational Testing Services. Those are just some of the examples of the pretty large contracts that Park has. And the bulk of that $96 million that you referred to will be essentially a pass-through to go to those vendors for the contracts for the work already underway. The Park Inc. budget is a relatively small piece of that that we will use to staff ourselves and provide oversight and ongoing support for the work. Now, there are two other very important controls that have been put in place. One is the state of Maryland. In order to give Park Inc. the money in order to pay the vendors, it has to have evidence of receipt of deliverables. Those receipt of deliverables have to be signed off by both Park Inc. and the consortium. So member states will serve on the panel that receives and attests to the comprehensiveness and quality of every deliverable from the vendors. So that will be a shared task so that Maryland has good comfort that we're not the only ones signing off, but also their partner states. In the end, of course, the U.S. Department of Ed has the final, they're the final arbiter of how the dollars are spent and whether the dollars are being spent responsibly. We have multiple checkpoints set up with them, monthly calls, regular budget check-ins. So there are multiple tiers of checks and balances in the system.
Okay. And I appreciate the CFO there.
I hope that was comprehensive.
You mentioned Pearson Assessments. If I'm trying to find the person in your network of consulting contracts who's actually preparing the test, who is it?
Again, a little bit of a complicated answer, if I might. There are two contractors, the Educational Testing Service and Pearson, who've been contracted, again, through a competitive bidding process in Florida to develop the items. Prior to that, the states, the 19 states, 18 plus D.C., worked to establish the test specifications, the content frameworks that would guide the development of those items. They put in place an evidence-centered design process. I won't bore you with the details of test design, but it was a very robust process that lasted for over a year to design the framework, if you will, within which the items would fit. Then the competitive bid went out. Pearson and ETS, two vendors, were selected in order to provide some internal checks and balances and internal ongoing competition among vendors to get best-in-class, highest quality. And then those folks are developing the items. Now, every one of those items is reviewed by multiple people from across the state. So if you can imagine review meetings, where hundreds of educators are looking at every set of items, so that every item, no item will go on this test that hasn't been signed off on by content folks from states, including Maryland.
And if I may just add, our current assessments, MSA and HSA, are duly produced by Pearson and ETS. And we already have teachers in our state who have been for the past 10 years a part of the process of vetting. So while they are aligning to a new set of standards, the relationship that Park Inc. has with those two vendors in particular is one that Maryland has enjoyed for the last 10 years.
Okay, stay right there because this is you brought this testing up. Is part of this test, I take it, going to be administered online to our students? Is that one of the
hope is that the final test all will be administered online. We have a transition plan that Laura and her team can kind of detail a little more, but we have a paper and pencil answer going into it until we can ensure that all of our districts are up and ready to be online. But in order for the test to perform with the dynamics we want so that students can really demonstrate their knowledge would be an online test.
And that's going to require, obviously, tens of thousands of middle school students to have computers or tablets or laptops or keyboards or something so they can log on at the same time and take the test.
So, yes, sir. And I will tell you currently, we have anywhere from 40 to 50% of our middle school and high school students already taking the test online. Some high schools and some middle schools are already giving their full battery of tests online. And our science test is given completely online. So Maryland, again, has been doing that for many years. The good news is Maryland has been doing that in a two-week window. With Park, we now have a four-week window. So we really are going to have to do a great job of getting our arms around what we need to actually assess our students and what would be maximum for our districts if they could have all that they wanted. We just need to make sure that we make that distinction so that we are comparing apples to apples.
Okay. When's the first test going to be taken?
We will take in March. We will do the pilot test, but the first operational test won't be given until next fall or winter in March of 2014-15.
March of 2015,
right.
Early spring. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And do all the jurisdictions in Maryland, are they aware that they're going to need some kind of software infrastructure and hardware, I guess, to pull this off?
Yes, and we have been working very hard with their local coordinators for technology to assess. Park has given us tools. I think we're in the third iteration now of tools where we can look at the number of students, the amount of hardware, the number of hours, so we can kind of make an assessment of what we actually need to give the test. And we gave that information back to the superintendents last week when we met with them so they could vet it and make sure that what their staff is giving us is what we thought. But we're also able to go into our database and see which schools were already giving their tests online so we can have a check and balance.
Okay. And I thank you for your patience to my colleagues. I've just got a few other questions. And you understand the concern that I have based
sure.
on this testing, preparing for testing, evaluation based on testing, crowding out teaching, which I'm sure you're keeping an eye on. But let me ask about the $250 million that we received. Someday I'd love to be president and just be able to hand out $250 million to a state and what exactly, I take it that was to secure all of the infrastructure that will be needed to implement these tests. If that's the case, can you assure the Board of Public Works that the $250 million we're receiving from the federal government is going to be used for that purpose?
Good morning, Mr. Controller. My name is Steve Brooks. I'm Chief Operating Officer with Maryland State Department of Education. Good morning, Governor. Good morning, Madam Treasurer. The $250 million is referring to the Race to the Top grant that Maryland received as a successful recipient of a four-year grant designated for four purposes. One, to assure that our teachers and our students have the assessment, a strong assessment program. Second, to support our lowest achieving schools. Third, to continue growth of school quality school teachers and principals. And fourth, of course, to support technology. Of the $250 million, $125 million of it was kept at the Maryland State Department of Education for statewide initiatives to support all our local school systems. And of that, the majority of the funding, or the largest portion of toward any of those four components, was designated toward technology. The other $125 million was directed to the individual grants to our local school systems. So the participating local school systems, 22 of the 24 who joined us in the Race to the Top grant, received a portion of that the second half of that, that they could then dedicate toward where they saw the needs most significant in their systems.
So half of the $250 million is being spent with your approval, or is there some listing of how the money is spent?
Yes, Mr. Controller, both the $125 million that we spend on statewide initiatives as well as the $125 million that the local school system, participating local school systems spend of their race to the top dollars, all of that is monitored closely by the U.S. Department of Education. There are monthly discussions with U.S. Department of Education on the status of that grant, and they are indeed monitoring that very closely.
Yes. Mr. Comptroller, when we received the money was received to fund a plan. So it wasn't as if we got $250 million and then we could decide how we were going to spend it to address those things that Steve articulated. But what we had to do was look at those four protocols under which we had to agree to make improvements and then give a scope of work under each of those, and each piece of work had a dollar amount attached to it, and so they're holding us accountable to spend X amount of dollars on this project exactly the way we said we were going to do it. So before the money even was released to the state, we had to have a plan of action that not only had the intervention strategies we were going to employ, but how much each would cost.
Okay, and if you could give to the Board of Public Works a list of how the $250 million was spent, I would be grateful in the any kind of detail that you have available. And I'm probably going to vote against this proposal, not because I don't agree with the concept, but I have major concerns about Florida hiring contractors and consultants through their procurement process, and now these folks are being handed over to us to implement programs for Maryland children. And I obviously appreciate the superintendent's overall administration, but I am not happy with the with what I'm hearing here, because it's so complicated and Byzantine. And, you know, I'm assuming at the end there's going to be accountability for Maryland kids. But, and I understand the difference between implementation and test preparation, but, boy, this thing is really, as you say, complicated.
As Laura said, complicated, Mr. Comptroller.
Someone said complicated.
but Mr. Comptroller, if I just may, and I, of course, respect you and your decision, but the consortium is a consortium of 18 states and the District of Columbia, and all the work that we are doing with this consortium was work that was agreed upon, and that was interesting, even with our higher ed partners at the table among the states. So while each state, and I think the piece where the complication may have been referenced is that all states had to have buy-in. So we had to share the work appropriately, and it's our time.
Okay. So, well, you've been great, and I've taken too long, but in the list of how the money is spent, would you identify whether it's spent for administrative purposes or for classroom purposes, please? In those different grants that were that you're going to send us.
May I ask, thank you. How many states are still in the consortium? Some have dropped out, right?
18. Plus the District of Columbia, 19. There were 22 initially, or 23? 23 initially.
Right. Yeah, this isn't easy. Everybody likes higher standards and a better curriculum for their kids in theory, but in practice it becomes something more difficult. So, and we were asked by Secretary Duncan to do this, correct?
And yes, sir. And we were asked by Secretary Duncan because of his long relationship with Maryland and the work that Maryland has done over the years. He wanted to give it to someone that he thought could handle it and get it done.
Well, good. Mm-hmm. Well, we're honored to step up to the plate.
I just have one. You have no question that you've got the capacity to do it.
So we have four positions that will come with it, Steve's a five, and Steve's most critical hire, and we already have applications as the general manager. So we will have five people new to the department that we will take out of the administrative costs, whose sole purpose for being in the state will be to manage.
And that's your
grant.
Judgment of what's required.
Yes, and that's what Florida had as well.
And that's an interesting question. Also, is the AG here that worked on this?
Lydia, yes.
Yes.
We have two of them. They were amazing.
Good.
I think the U.S. Department would like to hire them away. But.
So, well, I guess in brief, is there any legal or financial liability attached to Maryland now taking Florida's place and being the grants administrator? If for some reason that we never, why would any internet system ever go wrong? But suppose there's a big problem with the implementation. Is there any liability that attaches to the state of Maryland because of our new role here?
You want to start? Okay. I'm Lydia Hoover, Assistant Attorney General for the Maryland State Department of Education. We have looked at this, and I guess I would just like to say that it's not as complicated from a procurement standpoint as it seems, mostly because what happens is that Maryland is stepping in after 3 years of a grant award. So in the grants transfer agreement that's going to be executed, hopefully, between USDE, Florida, and Maryland, there's going to hopefully be a clean break between what Florida has done and what Maryland will be doing. So anything that occurs prior to January 1, 2014, would be the responsibility of Florida. Anything that happens January 1, 2014 on will be the responsibility of Maryland, but it will be solely funded by the federal funds and the grant dollars that are going to be transferred to Maryland.
So your testimony is there is no fiscal or legal liability that is going to develop despite our best intentions for a good execution of all of this because of our leadership here, a leadership role.
Because, Mr. Comptroller,
that seems a little. Who is the fiscal agent? I guess are we?
The state of Maryland is the fiscal agent.
Yeah.
Sure. I'm Elizabeth Kameen, and I'm principal counsel to the Maryland State Department of Education. To stand in front of anyone and say there's no liability ever for anything would be a statement that no lawyer would ever make. There is always a possibility that the federal government would come behind on Maryland's work and say, well, we're going to disallow these particular costs. That ends up in appeals. So I can never guarantee that there's no liability for anything. What we have built in to the sole source procurement contract and to the grant transfer is a clean break with Florida, number one, so that we're not taking on their problems and obligations, and number two, a good team, which is always what's really important in contract management. You really have to have a good team standing and looking at where the expenditures are being made and why they're being made, and that is part of what keeps you out of legal trouble.
Good. Thank you, Governor.
Sure. Anything else on... Okay, that's right. All right. Thank you all very much. Appreciate it. Sure. Kind of a unique one, Mr. Jolivet.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Treasurer, Governor, Mr. Controller. Before I speak to you about this particular job, I want to thank Mrs. McDonald in terms of whenever we in the minority community have issues or have to communicate with her, I'm always struck of how they reach out to help us. And I'd like to just say thank you. I've been doing this job for a considerable amount of time, and I have to confess this morning, Governor, I'm a bit melancholy. And I'm somewhat offended that we in Maryland would propose to engage in a $97 million procurement and not spend one dime with a minority business enterprise. I'm offended. So I want to ask you this morning to bear with me, to please bear with me, because in all of my career, with all that we do in Maryland to promote and facilitate minority inclusion, I am offended that a Maryland State Procurement Agency would even think of bringing before this honorable board a effectively $97 million procurement and not propose that $1 be spent with a minority business enterprise, or not $1 be spent with an African-American owned enterprise. And what I attempted to do today, and I don't want to belabor the point, but I'm here today largely because of a letter that I got from a very extraordinarily well-qualified African-American owned educational consulting firm who asked me to come today before your honorable board and convey the sentiment that what they're proposing with this particular grant, it may be laudable, Mr. Controller, it may have great purposes, it may have great intent, and it may even be successful. But it should not be approved by this honorable board as it is currently structured and as it is currently presented to this board. I would submit to you, and what is so disturbing, extremely disturbing about this grant, and I attempted to record it for you 2 years ago, Mr. Controller, I came before this board and I on a very similar matter where it's recorded in my exhibits, where the Maryland Department of Education presented a $3.6 million non-bid and sole source procurement to hire to award a contract to hire these principals, former principals who would be training principals in our urban communities. And it was very, very, very disappointing that we were going to spend $3 million and all of the very well-qualified African-American and other minority educational consultants who could have participated in this grant, the Department of Education came before this honorable board and justified a sole source procurement for this grant. Now, I would submit to you, very for prominent, even at that time, Mr. Controller, it was not appropriate, totally not appropriate, to approve the grant as a sole source. Because under Maryland law, everyone knows, under Maryland law, the Court of Appeals has interpreted sole source procurement very, very circumscribably and in a very limited situation. We just can't award a sole source contract, Mr. Controller, just because we want to. The law, Maryland law, is very, very limited in terms of when we can award a sole. It was not an appropriate sole source in 2011. There were two contracts that came before the board. I protested those contracts because at the time I said to you, and I provided documentations, that those two contracts were not an appropriate factual situation to justify awarding the contracts without competitive bidding. I said also that it is always detrimental and disadvantages, disadvantageous toward sole source contracts, because under sole source contracts, the state minority business provisions can be dispensed with. So therefore, it's very, very important for this board to be sensitive, very sensitive, of agencies' requests to support and approve a sole source contract, because in so approving a sole source contract, we inevitably and indirectly and inherently exclude our minority firms. That's what we do. We exclude. Because sole source do not require or even encourage minority participation. And again, I want to impress upon this board to have this contract reviewed. I know there is an extraordinary urgency from the agency to have this contract approved. I know that. I'm that's been communicated to me. But I think that all that we have done in Maryland, and Governor, even all that you did when you was in Baltimore City to encourage and to promote and facilitate minority inclusion, for us as a state, for you as a representative of the people of Maryland, for you to put your stamp of approval on this completely, extraordinarily illegal contract, Governor, it would offend me. It offends me that I'm even here today to have to talk to you about this, that some agency, Department of Education, would bring this before you. And I want to just comment on this, if I can. It was revealed today that the seven contractors who are the major players in this thing, in this consortium, it was revealed that are the names of these seven contractors. And in my research, in preparation for coming to this board today, I discovered of the seven contractors, independent contractors who were selected allegedly as a procurement competitively in the initial design and implementation, they're already part of the consortium, this contract. I was struck that not one of these seven contractors are minority. Not one! That is not only offended, but it's unacceptable for us as a board to put our stamp of approval on something that comes to us already convoluted. What they're asking you to do is to put your stamp of approval on a proposed agreement that comes to us that is tainted with racial discrimination and exclusionary practices. And I say, Mr. Comptroller, Governor, Madam Treasurer, I've been in this state too long, and I have seen what we have been able to do collectively trying to make sure that there's a level playing field, and what we do in government has integrity and is inclusive. And I say to you this morning that this particular proposal does not qualify. It does not. This is not an appropriate factual predicate to justify or warrant a sole source contract. In fact, what it is merely a subgrantee in disguise as a sole source contract. And under the
Mr. Jolivet, you got to wrap up now.
Under the statutory scheme enacted by the Congress, under the Race to the Top, it is wrong and it's impossible and it's unlawful to do sub-grants. It's a matter of public knowledge.
Thanks very much, Mr. Jolivet. Let's get a response from the Attorney General. Thanks.
So, Governor, I want to ask you, in closing, I want to respectfully ask you, if we can possibly delay this proposed award and at least make the effort to see if we can be more inclusive, that we can convince the people who you're going to award it to open up this contract for qualified minority firms. And I know that we have qualified. I put a letter from one of our most extraordinary African-American firms.
I know Dr. Amprey very well.
Excellent, yes. Education consultant.
Yes, Mr. Jolivet, you need to let us move on with this agenda.
But, Governor, he should not have been left out of this.
Yes, Mr. Jolivet.
And I just want to say that. I want to emphasize that.
Yes, sir, I understand your point, and you've emphasized it several times at great volume. Now, you're going to wrap up for us so that we can answer
well,
the questions.
Well, I want to thank you for...
Thank you, Mr.
I want to thank you for allowing me to be here today, and I preference...
Always, Mr. Jolivet.
I preference my comments initially because... As I said to you before, Governor, I'm offended. I'm totally offended.
You've made that clear several times, Mr.
I'm offended that we have to do
I understand. We're going to try
that
to
you
answer.
Can leave us out. I'm offended.
I understand, Mr. Jolivet. Thank you very, very much for being here. And we're going to answer in a respectful way. The concerns Mr. Jolivet have, I think, substantively, beyond his personal offense, is that this contract is illegal because it is sole source, and that it also does not include any minority business persons within this bid. Would you answer each of those arguments that he's made to us?
Yes, Governor. Our position is that the contract is not illegal. It has been signed off for legal sufficiency, and there are two procurement points that Mr. Jolivet mentioned that you succinctly summed up as one, the sole source portion of the procurement at issue, and then the MBE goal, which is 0%. So first, on the sole source, under the procurement regulations, the agency needs to make a determination that only one vendor exists to perform the contract. That determination has been made by the agency that Park, Inc., at this point in time, is the only vendor that can perform the contract. And the reasons for that are several, but two of the main points are that Park, Inc. will be assuming all of the contracts that Florida originally competitively bid. That's going to be about $87 million of this contract. So Park, Inc. will be the only entity that has that is in privity of contract with those vendors like ETS and Pearson that Ms. Sloper had mentioned. The rest of the approximately $96 million is all going to be work that has to be self-performed by Park, Inc. And it has to be self-performed by Park, Inc. because the Park, Inc. personnel have been around since the inception of the grant and the work that's being done to further the test in this matter. They've been around since 2010. At this point, there is approximately 9 months left on the grant. Those same people have to perform for consistency purposes. So there's the assumption part and then the self-performance part. Not related to sole source, but related to Mr. Jolivet's points, was the MBE goal. There is no MBE requirement of a percentage to be put on any contract in the state of Maryland. The MBE is merely a goal. Each agency determines on a contract-by-contract basis what that goal should be. The agency personnel look at the contract. They look at the subcontracting opportunities. They look at the available MBEs. MSDE did all of that through their procurement review group, which is required by the Board of Public Works Advisory, and they determined that there was a 0% goal. One of the things that the agency added in, however, was even though there is a 0% goal, they still want to encourage Park, Inc. to use as many minority business enterprises as they possibly can and using good faith efforts as the work progresses.
How much do they, and so what does that mean? How much work do they have to do that's not the self-work?
What we understand from speaking with Park, Inc. is that there may be things like the office supplies that they can purchase once they're under a Maryland contract. There may be some IT services. Park Inc. may be able to speak to that a little better than I can, but they have looked at certain things that they might be able to procure through an MBE contractor.
Mm-hmm. Somebody from Park want to address that?
Yes, thank you. And I'll just build on the Attorney General's statement. Park Inc. is very willing to explore contracting with businesses for things like IT services, printing, communications, transcription services. We have multiple meetings, and there are often the need for transcription services. So we are committed to exploring those things. We have taken a look at the MBE business website, and we'll pay some attention to that moving forward.
How much contracting? What's the dollar for?
The flexible dollars to spend are relatively small. As I mentioned, most of the contracts are already in place through existing contracts for about $86 million existing.
And when this was this bid under federal requirements or Florida state requirements or what?
The multiple contracts were bid through Florida, and they were bid, therefore, under Florida state law.
Okay. So why should we even have to count this on our MBEs? I mean, we're picking up a contracts that have already been engaged in for the most part, right?
Right, but
that's right. Dr. Lowry?
Yes, Governor.
Did you all, do you go through this and you thought, Ms. Chalbert, you can have a seat. I'll call you back up, as I always do, respectfully, to shout at us again before we're done. Dr. Lowry, did you all discuss this one?
Yes, we've discussed it at length. As a matter of fact, Steve Brooks, who is the chief operating officer, had this conversation with the attorneys general and Park Inc. from the very beginning. We currently sit at about a 25% MBE rate, about 25%. But we made this a point early on, and that is why we had a discussion with them with the money remaining outside of the $86 million that is left where they can procure other services that they consider MBE as a priority.
Yeah, actually, the 25% relates to Maryland's prior year MBE. We've been committed to MBE through our contracts wherever possible and have had strong representation in all of our MSDE contracts. Last year, we did hit the 25% level. We've been above that level significantly every year. So it's very important to the department. In this situation, as Ms. Slover mentioned, most of the contracts, and so the vast majority of this funding, had already been put into contracts through Florida. So therefore, there was very limited opportunity with regard to the entire grant. Given the amount of time that we had, we did not know how much Park Inc. could commit of the remaining work that still needs to be let to MBEs. So therefore, there's a zero MBE goal. However, we have stressed to Park Inc., to Ms. Slover, that they do need to go onto the transportation website and look for those opportunities for Maryland MBEs to participate in this grant wherever possible.
Mm-hmm. And Governor, if I may, and of course we are all very sensitive to the MBE protocols that Maryland has handled so well. We are in the middle of 2 or 3 years of this work. Our students have to have a summative assessment by March 2015. We have to field test in March. If we do anything to disrupt the consistency of this work, we stop everything. We put our students and students in 18 other jurisdictions in jeopardy, and many of the states like Maryland, and you will hear from us today about an extension, really are moving to this assessment at the at the decision to move away from the others. This is our assessment. So we're not only working on real finite timelines about making the transition from Florida to Maryland, but we're working on finite timelines for making sure that everything runs consistently so that we can have our services.
And Ms. Hurley, what is the overall NDA goal that we, I mean, what number did we hit last year?
25.
Was that the all-time high? So no administration on any year has ever hit the 25% that we hit last year. All right. And we're here, Dr. Lowry, in essence, picking up the ball after Florida dropped it at the request of President Obama's Secretary of Education,
right.
Even though the vast majority of these contracts for this testing and education things have already been let by Florida. But there is a remaining several million dollars that could be open to MBE.
Right.
Ms. Summers, was it?
Slover, I think, was about
$10 million.
86 is for the transfer, and so I think it was like $10 million.
There's about $86 million that have already been encumbered, and there are about $500,000, about $500,000 for within the Park Inc. budget, within my direct services budget that I have responsibility for, and we will make it a priority to explore using MBE contractors for the work that we do.
And Mr. Jolivet has some names, including those of Dr. Ms. Slover.
Sorry, pardon?
Yeah. So, in other words, I mean, this is jarring to the ear for many of us because we have the highest MBE goal of any state in the union. We also have a lot of education professionals, IT professionals, who are minority, African American. So we feel kind of saddled here by this contract that we understand it's important. We don't want to put you back, but we need you to be more than simply open to maybe possibly exploring greater minority participation.
I appreciate
what
that.
I'm saying?
I appreciate that.
Okay.
Yes, you have my commitment that we will be very aggressive in exploring those opportunities.
And I'd encourage you to talk to, you know, everyone you possibly can, work with Ms. Hurley. We're not going to designate particular contractors. We can't do that, but we have a lot of good people in our state, and we're doing the president a favor here, and we're glad to do that. Mr. Jolivet, you want to conclude for us?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Governor, I would just like, in closing, in my investigation, of the facts of this particular grant, it was called to my attention when the state of Florida Department of Education was in the process of putting this grant together. There are very serious small business and minority requirements that are imposed on grants of this kind by the federal law. Public Law 95507, which was authored by Congressman Perry Mitchell, requires projects like this to provide and to establish goals for not only small business but minority business. So what we discovered is that somehow or another this got kind of shoved under the rug or wasn't facilitated, and it never happened. There were no small business, minority business, or disadvantaged businesses to participate in the grant at all. We think that was certainly a most serious flaw, but more importantly, there is some evidence that it was deliberate and calculated and purposeful. But nonetheless, I'm not here today to prove that, but the bottom line is, the factor, the controlling factor that I would ask this board to be sensitive to and even consider in your decision as to whether or not we want in Maryland all that we do in Maryland, whether we in Maryland should put our stamp of approval on a grant that comes to us already defective, that already has racial, gender, ethnical shortcomings to it. So the question that I think the board should consider, is it appropriate at all for the great state of Maryland, in light of all that we do to promote, facilitate equal opportunity for everyone, should we put our stamp of approval on a racially discriminatory document and program that seeks to leave some of our people out? And my answer, and my suggested answer to this honorable board, is that no. Absolutely a resounding no, because we don't do business like that in Maryland. That's not the way we do business. We do business in a fair and equitable way, and we should never put our stamp of approval on a racially discriminatory program or project. And with that, I just need to thank you, Governor, and I apologize for howling in your ear. But I used to do the same thing when you went to Board of Estimates, so I don't know, Governor, why. I hope you're not getting soft on me. I used to do the same thing to you, and you used to say, Arnold, thanks for getting me straight. And has there been a change?
No, sir.
I used to do the same thing years ago, and you and I used to walk out, and when the battle was over with, you said, Arnold, I love you. And I said, Governor, I love you too. Has that changed?
Mr. Jolivet, I love you.
In all humor, I needed to remind you, I apologize for disclosing your business in the public, but we had a great time in Baltimore. And to a large extent, we've had a great time in your last 7 years. And one of the things, like I said, I actually apologize. And when I preferenced my remarks when I came to you, because I knew this morning that I was going to be in melancholy and I was going to be somewhat offended about this whole situation. So I gave you fair warning, Governor. I did. I think I did. But nevertheless, I don't come down here often, Madam Treasurer, and you know I don't. I don't come down very often. But when I come, I always try to present a compelling argument that whatever is being done in terms of our minority and our women's business program is not compatible with the historical high standard that we have done. And quite frankly, I'm about to retire right now, Governor. I got another year or so in this business. But I'm always proud. In fact, I'm writing a book, Governor. I'm writing a book on minority participation in the city of Baltimore. I'm writing another book on minority participation on the state of Maryland. And because of my relationship with the late Congressman Mitchell, I'm writing a book on minority participation in the federal government. So I'm doing this largely because it's been a labor of love. I just feel, I was born in the South, Mr. Controller, and I saw discrimination. I saw exclusionary tactics. I saw the worst and I saw the best. I marched with Martin Luther King Jr. I marched with Rab Abernathy. But the greatest of all the civil rights fighters was our own Congressman Perrin J. Mitchell. And I was his political aide. And I learned at that time that all of us have an overriding duty and responsibility to make sure that we are fair and that we are inclusive in everything that we do. And I sometimes take issue with the governor, but he knows that altogether, cumulatively, he knows that I'm very fond of him. I think very highly of him. I
promote him wherever I can. I don't get involved in politics because I'm not a politician. But no. To make a long story short, I need to wind it down and just, in all fairness and honesty, just tell you how much I appreciate you. Just listening to me. Governor, you always says, oh, I can buy some of what you say and some of I can't. But nonetheless, let me just thank you for being allowed to be attentive, to listen to me for maybe 10 minutes. But Governor, I appreciate you. Madam Treasurer, I want you to know how much I appreciate you too. And I think we all in this business together. It might be my job to run the association, the minority businesses, but I always feel confident that when I come before you and I make my case as best as I can, that you will have sufficient information to make intelligent decisions. And that's all I can ask. And I believe if you make an intelligent, reasonable decision on this, you would not approve this agenda. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jolivet. And I hope the book reflects that by the time we left the city of Baltimore, that we had achieved the highest goals that the city had ever achieved on minority business development, as well as last year having achieved the highest goals here. This is a unique circumstance. I mean, we're picking up the ball for contracts that were let before it came here. Florida's let the president down, and we're not going to do that. But we do expect a slower, since if we move forward with this, that you will employ as many of our Maryland people as you can and pursue the spirit of the inclusion and the diversity that we believe is our strength in our state. Are there any other issues on other agenda items?
Yes, to sum up why I'm going to vote no on this particular proposal. I continue to be uncomfortable with the idea that Maryland is becoming the front person, I guess, on this sprawling contract, which is perhaps clear to folks, but not very clear to me, as to exactly, A, why Florida handed it off and why we're picking it up. I am similarly uncomfortable with spending almost $100 million on yet another long and interminable line of tests for our kids. And I've said earlier that I think we're becoming obsessed to a point of being counterproductive with these standardized exams. And I'm very uncomfortable with approving an initiative that apparently is going to require tens of thousands of our kids in Maryland to use the same technology at the same time to take a test come spring of 2015. So, appreciate Mr. Jolivet's concerns. I can see why some folks would say that that's a little difficult right now. Mr. Jolivet, we kid a lot about you sometimes. Where is he?
Here I am,
Bill. Yeah, well, you got a great necktie over there, I'll tell you that.
Thank you.
Yep, and just want to say Merry Christmas to you, and it's not easy being out there fighting for the battles that you do, but I've got some major concerns here with this contract, and I hope that the information we get from the department will keep us in the loop as it continues to be implemented. So I would vote no on this, and I do have one other item.
Could I just, since we're talking about this project, I want to say I understand we all have been the recipient of innumerable concerns about the Common Core and about the impact on teaching and the ability of teachers to use their skills to the best of what they think of their advantage. Maryland has been in the forefront, however, of accountability for a couple of decades now, And I think it's served us well. It has needed a lot of changing, examination, reforms along the way, and I assume it will continue to. But you can't exercise this project. You can't go forward with our goals without some form of accountability. And venturing into this new consortium with essentially not just Maryland, but a large number of the leading states, it's going to be tough. But when you look at the competition our kids are facing around the globe, we have to continue to be in the forefront of education in America, or we're sunk. So I wish, actually, that we had started in the position of the leadership in being able to use our laws and do the procurement ourselves. Florida got that role. Florida has since, as the governor said, backed out. And the question is whether the venture goes forward. If the venture goes forward, and we want to make sure it goes forward well, I have great faith in Dr. Lowry and the ability of her department to do it. I think PARC is the natural successor, and we're simply picking up the oversight of it. It's a tough job. I think the comptroller is right. There are a lot of things that have to work right, but that doesn't mean we stop or we give up. So we will be watching. I usually agree with Mr. Jolivet. I think on this particular one, I don't. The contracts have been let. To the extent that they haven't been let, I am quite sure that PARC and Ms. Slover will reach out, and that we will keep on top of it, too, and see through Dr. Lowry that, in fact, and the secretary, that they do accomplish what they seek to in terms of minority participation. And so for all these reasons, I feel quite comfortable actually voting for this item, Governor.
Okay. All right. And Dr. Lowry, describe for me how much of this is an IT challenge, how much of it is a testing and education?
A lot of it is really building items, and I would just like to just explicate a little further about the assessments. I met with the teachers over the year yesterday. Right now what we have is the summative assessment we know that's coming on board. But what they're asking for, and what a lot of this work would be two formative assessments. So instead of using lagging data from last year, we can assess students when they walk into the door at the beginning of the school year. We can assess them again in the middle of the year. So teachers are really aligned with what students must know and be able to do at the end of the year. So our teachers are asking for this, and a lot of systems already do it. Just to reiterate, Governor, the only tests that the state requires is a summative assessment. A lot of the other tests that are given are formative assessments that are administered at the local level, so that they can get information on their students. Okay. So a lot of this.
So it's mostly the testing, and not the IT.
It's not the IT.
Is this part of this about a billion kids going online and taking an IT, an exam online?
No, it's not.
Okay, good. Because I was going to say that if there's anything we've learned from the recent week, make sure you have the IT people driving the IT train, and not the educators or the health or the police people. Thought I'd learned that one years ago. All right. Anything else on these matters which are still? Are we still on UT, Eloise Foster? All right. Any other matters on budget management? Okay. But what was that one? We want to do that one separately, right? You want to see what about that one, right?
Please.
No.
It's.
All right. We're going to call item 9 first. Treasurer moves approval, seconded by the governor. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? Comptroller votes no. Now we are on the balance of the budget and management agenda items. The comptroller moves approval, seconded by the treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. All right. Now we move on to University System of Maryland.
Morning, Governor, Mr. Comptroller, and Treasurer.
Yeah, let's do this. A lot of people are going to clear out, and I need to take a bio break myself. So I'll be back in 1 minute. Just hold your powder.